And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have two newly recorded interviews for you. Part one is with a renowned photographer talking about a new collection of his work. And part two will feature Alvaro Garcia from the music faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside talking about a couple of exciting concerts coming up this weekend with the UW-Parkside Orchestra featuring the stunning music of John Williams from the films of the Star Wars franchise. Here's part one. And we're spending the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show talking with a renowned photographer by the name of David Alexander, probably best known to the general public for the album covers he helped create, including the classic Eagles album Hotel California, surely one of the best, most iconic album covers of all time. He worked as well with Aretha Franklin, James Taylor, Tina Turner, Ringo Starr, Dolly Parton, just to name a few. And he's also well known for film posters, including two of the most iconic, The Terminator and 9 to 5. There shows some versatility and range. But what we're talking about today is a beautiful new tabletop book that has just come out called Pictures of Time. And in this beautiful book, featuring photographs by David Alexander, he seeks to capture time in still photographs. And it's an intriguing concept that in which he really achieves some beautiful, beautiful work. And although we're in the disadvantage in the medium of radio and can't show you the book, of course, we can certainly talk about it and try to give you a sense of just how lovely and intriguing this book is. Again, it's titled Pictures of Time, Seeing Time in the Ordinary World. And David Alexander, we welcome you to the morning show.
Oh, thank you, Ron. Greg, I'm sorry. It's good to speak with you.
I did notice in your biography that it says that you went to law school. I wonder if there is a line we can trace between that and your work as a renowned photographer. I mean, is there a straight line from A to B?
Nobody's ever asked me about that before. Yeah, I graduated from the University of Chicago Law School, not far from where you are.
Right.
Yes, there is very much a straight line. When I was in law school, it was something I always wanted to do. I pursued really hard, got into a great law school. But once I got into law school, I realized that they were teaching us how to use words in ways that I just truly didn't like. We had brilliant professors. It was really fascinating. But it just wasn't for me. I realized after all those years of seeking to get into a great school. And so it became really clear to me that if words weren't what I wanted to work with in my life, then I would make pictures. And it was really that simple. It was like the opposite of words was pictures. I had never taken a photograph, hardly ever been in an art museum. But I decided while I was in law school that I was going to learn photography and do photography, and which is really what I did.
Wow. So your career is so interesting in that, I mean, I just rattled off a tiny little slice of your resume in terms of what you have done in the entertainment or celebrity world. But here we are then with this beautiful book, Pictures of Time, in which there is nary a celebrity to be seen. Many of these photographs are, of course, are of trees and flowers and other right. Images in nature, although there are some really intriguing photographs of ordinary people out in public. Have you always done, in a sense, both kinds of photography, or did you leave the one for the other?
I would say I left the one for the other, like even shooting out in the street. So all my work now is totally informed by the work I did commercially. It was that work where I really learned photography. I learned what my story was. I learned how to make a photograph. I learned what a photograph is, in addition to all the technical work that we had to do back in the day with film. And then when I stopped doing commercial work and I started looking around at the world, it just led me into, I just take my camera and I found that the things I photographed, I would photograph, all had something in common, that there were qualities that spoke to me. I don't see the difference, in other words, between a flower, a tree, a weed, or a person, or a cloud, or a bird. To me, they're all living or natural things that are, you know, as we know, formed by a lot of the same molecules and cells that we all have in common. And there are a lot of things in common among all living and natural things. So in the course of doing the work over decades, I made a lot of these pictures, and I studied them, and I did a lot of reading. And what I came to was that the subject I photographed is time, and always has been time, even when I was doing the commercial work. And time, to me, my definition, I think this is a photographer's definition of time, is the story of how life is put together and how life works. That's what I photograph.
I like
that. That's what Pictures of Time is about.
Right. And many of the pairings in this book are truly intriguing. I want to be sure to ask you just a quick question about, I guess we could call it technology. I'm not sure I can think of anything in our lives that has changed as dramatically as the task of taking photographs over the last few years.
Right.
I wonder, have you changed also as a photographer, or are you, in a sense, an old-fashioned photographer doing photography, in a sense, in the old-fashioned way?
I would say much the latter. I shoot digitally now, but I treat my images the way I would treat film. I don't use Photoshop ever. I never will. But I work in Lightroom, Adobe's Lightroom, and I'll lighten or darken images or adjust contrast the same way I would with a film image, but only across the whole image. And if I try to make a picture that doesn't work, just like with film, I realize that I failed. And if I can, I'll go back and try to do something again. Or, you know, as with film, I try to learn from my mistakes and not make them again. But I treat digital as much like film as I can.
We're speaking with David Alexander, and we're talking about a beautiful coffee table book of his that has just come out called Pictures of Time. Do you remember when the notion of capturing time in a photograph first occurred to you? I mean, it sounds like this has been kind of a part of you and part of your work for quite a long time, and maybe it's impossible for you to remember when it first dawned on you that such a thing was possible.
But, you know, it was in the course of doing the commercial work. So that work involved really intense connections with the people I photographed. I would look at them carefully, and I had to figure out on the fly what it would take to get the picture I wanted with each artist or group of people that I photographed. And I began to realize at some point I saw the connections between people, because somebody's eyes or their hands or even their elbows. And I could see that, and I started thinking about how similar that was, the qualities in people to other living things. And was while doing that work that really the seed of this idea, which is really what I've been doing now for some decades and will continue to do as long as I can, but that seed was what grew. It was planted while I was doing the commercial work. And it was fascinating. I began to see people differently, even the ones I photographed. It was great. You know, those that work was so much fun, the interactions with all the artists, and they're so creative and interesting. It was really, really great.
The photographs are separated into six sections: shape, pairing, right, reflection, rhythm, together, and aging. Was it hard to come up with those six headings in order in within which to group these photographs, or did that come pretty naturally and quickly?
Well, you know, it took me, great question. It took me a long time to realize that time had become the subject that I photographed. And I truly don't see differences between people and trees or flowers or weeds. To me, I just see living things. After doing some reading and thinking and studying my photographs, and I realized that time had become the subject that I photographed, those categories that are the chapters in the book, they just basically wrote themselves. Because I'd look at the work, and I could see, and that's really the way I would break down the definition of seeing time. You know, I realize it's kind of weird to say that you see time, but I truly believe that I do, and I truly believe that the book expresses time. And each page spread in the book, every time you turn the page, I hope this was your experience. There's a different expression of time with each page turn.
And absolutely.
Great, thanks. And the collective whole is the experience of the book.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, that's great. Yeah. I appreciate everything you're saying. I did want to say that if I have a favorite section of the book, it's the final section of the book, which is titled Aging. And one of the things that is so intriguing and beautiful about this section of the book is that you have pictures here of, I think it's pretty much all flowers and trees, mostly flowers, and they are flowers at the end of their lifespan. So the kind of flowers that almost never are captured in photographs. I mean, you know, they're not the kind of thing that we see on the cover of a pretty greeting card or whatever. These are flowers, trees, leaves that have begun to wither. And I've never stopped to think about how beautiful these still are. I mean, still remain, even though they are not in the fresh bloom of the prime of life, so to speak. I wonder what you see when you look at these particular photographs.
Well, what you just described is exactly what I see. I see incredible beauty at every stage of life. You know, people have photographed aging people with, you know, wrinkles on their skin for years, and made, you know, beautiful pictures, and you look at the wrinkles, and, you know, but it's life, and the same thing happens with flowers and trees. And really, the reason I chose not to put any people in that chapter is, you know what, I don't know, a metaphor in a sense. Is it just to experience that? Yeah, and, you know, and yes, to me, those things are as beautiful as a young flower in bloom or a leaf in bloom.
Well said.
It's all magical as far as I'm concerned.
The book, again, is Pictures of Time, Seeing Time in the Ordinary World, Capturing the Photographs of David Alexander. David Alexander, what a pleasure and honor to speak with you. Thank you for giving the world this lovely book, and thank you for being my morning show guest today.
Great. Thank you, Greg. The website is picturesoftime.com, but has the entire book on it, and the ability to purchase books if anybody wants to do that.
Very good. Best wishes to you.
Really good to speak to you. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and here's part two.
Thank you.
If there was ever music that does not require an introduction, it's that. That is, of course, the main theme from the first Star Wars movie that was released, I believe, back in 1977. Ancient history in some respects, but I remember it vividly because I was in high school at the time, and many of my friends and I couldn't wait to see this much-anticipated film, and indeed, the magnificent film score of John Williams was a big reason why that film had such amazing impact on all who saw it. Well, the marvelous music from the entire Star Wars film franchise is the subject, if you will, or the focus of the next performances of the University of Wisconsin Parkside Orchestra and Community Orchestra. Two performances this coming weekend, both 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday and Sunday, November 11th and 12th. And this is the fourth time that the orchestras of Parkside have presented a Star Wars-themed concert, and for the first time since 2019. And I'm so happy to have with me for this portion of the morning show Dr. Alvaro Garcia, who is the coordinator of orchestral activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and a member of their faculty. And he will be on the podium leading the performance. And this is a brainchild of his that I think has become a really treasured part of the artistic landscape and schedule of UW-Parkside. And it's great to have this exciting event back after several years absent. And Professor Alvaro Garcia, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you for having me, Craig.
So glad we can have this conversation. So let's replay just a little bit about the very first time you did one of these concerts devoted to the music of Star Wars. How long ago was that? And tell us about what precipitated you to undertake this.
So one of the things that we always try to do at the university is just make sure that our concerts are pedagogically, they are informing the students to what they need to do in the professional world of music. And you know, some of the most challenging music comes from the movie world, from the soundtracks of movies. And John Williams is not an easy feat to perform. So I thought it was pedagogically proper, and it will attract audiences to Parkside, right? Not only our common audience that comes to our classical concerts, but also new audiences that will come to this. And this was back in 2015 when we started, and it was a very, you know, short, moderated program about Star Wars with just the first suite. And we concentrated on that, and it was extremely successful. I mean, we sold the house the night of the performance. We never thought that in the Francis Bedford we ever will sell the house, and we sold the house. And since then it seemed fitting that every 3 years or so, that we will bring the series back, so all the students, new students, get to incorporate that. And, you know, it has been sort of a growing enterprise of itself, because every time we try to do something different. So, you know, the next concert was 2017, which was The Force Awakens, and that concert came as there was released the third trilogy. Yep. Of the movies was being released, and the music was already available for purchase. So why not just to make one of the Force Awakens concerts? So that's what we did. And then finally in 2019, we went all out, and that concert also sold out. And in 2019, we were all out, and we put the concert in the main stage theater, which is double the capacity for seating. So we will never sell the, you know, we get 400 people there. That will be fantastic. And we made an incredible show with sound effects, voiceovers, light design. And to our surprise, the night of the performance, we sold out the house.
And it's a big house. I mean,
it's
that's a big
house.
Auditorium.
640 seats. That's what we sold that night, 640 seats. And we had to turn people away like about 15 to 20 minutes before the performance.
I spoke with your dean, Leslie Walker, Dr. Leslie Walker, the other night. And she mentioned that in her years as dean, and I don't remember how long she's been dean, but it's been for a few years, that is the one and only time she can remember that the main stage theater is completely sold out.
I've been at Parkside for 21, 22 years almost at Parkside.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Time flies.
Time flies. the only other time that I know that house was sold was with the musical The Music Man.
Mm.
And that's because we had a high school marching band coming into the stage at every night of the performance,
sure.
A different one. So we always sold that
sure.
house for that show. But I cannot recollect right now of any other performance that would have sold the house in
wow.
the stage.
I was at that performance, well, one of them in the main theater, mm-hmm. And was that the one in 2019?
Yes.
Yeah. I was there. It was an amazing night, mm-hmm. and just a special electricity in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly fully understand your interest in exposing your students to film music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're absolutely right. It's a worthwhile endeavor in so many respects. What drew you specifically to the music of Star Wars? Versus.
Well,
music from any number of other films that you might have wanted to explore.
Yeah, and you know, every year we do a concert dedicated to the film music, right? So we explore other... John Williams is not the only one we explore, so there's other composers that we try to explore. John Williams is such an iconic, and his melodies are so memorable, and it's a music that already the kids recognize immediately. Everyone will recognize the music immediately. Then you may have... Half of the orchestra may be a Star Wars fan already, and the other half not yet. I was somewhat of a fan, but I have to say now I'm completely vested after four concerts doing this and four concerts of doing research. And the more vested, the more movies I see, the more series, TV series I watch. There's a whole opening world now with the Enterprise of Disney Plus is even making it even more famous than it was initially.
Right.
Right. And is music... that goes across the ages, right? I mean, you have to realize the first movie came in 1975 and the last one was not long ago, right? So we are talking about three decades of ages that they will bring people together. So there is a lot of commonality there in terms of that. But you know, for this concert now always has been the music of John Williams. This new concert that we have this weekend is a little bit more expanded as we expand through other composers that also compose music for Star Wars. And you have, for example, Michael Giacchino, who did music for Rogue One. You have Ludwig Göransson, who did the music for The Mandalorian. Right, and some other surprises that I have there that I won't disclose at this point, but
sure.
You have to come and see it. It's just a fantastic thing. There are more less known composers than they are now being brought into this saga of Star Wars, and it's just fantastic music.
Did you come to this, that is, did you create that first concert back in 2015 as yourself a big fan of Star Wars, or was this primarily for other reasons that drew you?
No, I mean, I just had to choose a movie track, and I thought that, well, this is probably, the orchestras were in a good place that I thought, because the required orchestration is large. So I thought we were in a good place to start doing that, number one. Logistically, can we do it, right?
Right.
But also, I'm a fan, so I couldn't say no to the idea and say, well, I think we are ready to do this kind of music now. I think this is the moment that we should project that. And it was so successful, not only among the audience, but also among the orchestral players, right? So it's like, well, we had to bring it back, you know? And right now, this new concert, too, you know, we talk about... Every Star Wars concert is a bit different, right? Now we are talking about the characters of the Star Wars universe.
You know, in this concert
in
coming
this
up
one
this
concert.
Weekend.
So it's if you will, a pathway, a travel through the different emotional characters, right? Right now, the movies, the series, they are trying to be more emotional, more vested in deep connections about what is the character, how the character feels. And the music really reflects that. And kind of we try to explore that. And I found myself explaining to the orchestra many times how the characters evolve and what the music was trying to tell us at that point. So, for example, we are going to be playing music that describes Obi-Wan Kenobi. But the Obi-Wan Kenobi that that music describes is not the Obi-Wan Kenobi across all three trilogies. It's specifically a very specific moment in time in the history of Obi-Wan Kenobi in which he's lost. He's lost. It's after the demise, if you will, of the Jedi Order. And he's lost. He's alone. Right, and what happens in those 10 years that he's alone, how he feels about it, and that's why the music and how he resurfaces after being alone for 10 years and finds the force again, and how music really empowers that feeling.
That's an important distinction. Of course, when you're talking about a franchise that spans several decades, that's important. I mean, for some of us, I mean, particularly for old people like me, when you hear the name Obi-Wan Kenobi, we think of Alec Guinness.
Correct.
And that grizzled old veteran towards the very end of his life. That's who he is. And, of course, through the whole span of the entire franchise, Obi-Wan Kenobi lives a long life and a varied life. And so you're choosing music that reflects, in this case, a particular chapter from his life.
It's basically, I mean, we don't know exactly what his age is at this point, but if I could guesstimate, right, we are talking about an Obi-Wan Kenobi that is in the late 30s, mid 40s, around that age. And he has lived war. He has lived the tragedy of war, if you say. So it's just a soul that has been somewhat consumed by the tragedy of what happens in the scene.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. Alvaro Garcia, who is from the music faculty at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And he will be leading the Parkside Orchestra and Community Orchestra in two performances this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, November 11th and 12th, 3 o'clock in the beautiful Francis Bedford Concert Hall. And, this is the fourth time that the orchestras of Parkside have presented a concert devoted to the music from the Star Wars films. And as Professor Garcia was just saying, this concert coming up this weekend, this performance, this program, is devoted specifically to various important characters within the Star Wars universe and film franchise, with music to match that depicts them. I was telling you before we went on the air that at Carthage, I am teaching opera history this semester. And just by happy coincidence, yesterday we started Wagner with Die Fliegende Holländer, The Flying Dutchman. And in trying to help this class of non-music majors understand the whole notion of a leitmotif in a Wagner opera, I turned, as I always do, to Star Wars and to the big Imperial March that's kind of one of the main themes associated with Darth Vader. I thought we would listen to that, but first have you talk about it, what it is musically about this that makes it especially distinctive, and maybe a little bit about what makes it challenging for the orchestra to play, maybe challenging and or satisfying.
So there's a lot of connections, right? I mean, John Williams is a classical trained composer. And of course, he has a lot of traits of the Western musical history in his writing, right? If you will, you are talking about, and we are going to hear it in the Imperial March, you have the three notes, right? Pam, 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 right? And you know those three notes already. You can see Darth Vader coming by your side and walking. And that's the step of the walk. But in a sense, it's just kind of almost getting a verbatim quote from Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you know, knocking the fate at the door, right? And that's where we get into the, as you pointed out, the Wagner, the leitmotif, right? And how you take a little idea, a motif, an idea, a short burst melody that will completely means several factuals throughout the trilogies, right? That you know already there is either tragic or there is the Imperial coming, or Darth Vader is walking to the scene, or there is a Star Destroyer coming out of nowhere. So there's always that signals that and empowers you and puts a feeling on you that you already recognize, right, at that moment. It probably has now far more meaning than it had when the first movie was released itself, right, because it has expanded the idea. But that's the power of musical transformation, right? You know, how you take that motif and you transform it and you carry it away. The same thing, you have the very similar motif for the Force. When you see an important Jedi coming in, or Master Yoda, or you have the idea of the Force coming in, is always the same horn playing that motif coming through the music, right? So it's very important how we connect all those things. It's part of our classical tradition, and we recognize that because we have seen it before in other movies or so, how those skills or technical traits and elements make the idea to empower, basically to push that emotion on you, you know, to make it grander, if so.
Well, let's listen to this iconic music that will forever be associated, of course, with the character of Darth Vader and his dark minions who follow him. So this is the so-called Imperial March. According to this CD, this specifically is drawn from The Empire Strikes Back, but it is, of course, a theme. The actual theme itself appears again and again through the franchise. And again, for our purposes today, we're listening to the composer, John Williams himself, leading the Boston Pops, the Imperial March from the Star Wars franchise. The Imperial March from The Empire Strikes Back, and played by the Boston Pops, conducted by the composer John Williams. And it is so interesting. I wish all of you could have had the experience I did of listening to this with my guest, Alvaro Garcia, who will be conducting this weekend's performance, and talking about, oh, this part is really hard, and oh, this part is really hard. And so often we don't even think about some of those incredibly intricate passages in that. We just think about the da 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 da, da da, which is probably not terribly hard to play, but
yeah,
some of this is just fiendishly difficult. Yeah. And so I can see how this would be a tremendous challenge for your group. I know that also on the program this weekend will be the Luke and Leia theme from Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Say a quick word about this, and then we will listen to this passage as well.
And you know, this is a beautiful theme throughout that expresses the connection between Luke and Leia. I mean, initially, I mean, I think it was the first movie, was kind of understood that they were falling in love, but actually it was not love. It was just actually they are brother and sister, right? And how they
different connect, kind of love.
Different kind of love, right? So what is important is how they connect in the Return of the Jedi, how they connect the two together, and as brother and sister, and Luke tells Leia, you know, you are my sister, Darth Vader is my father, you also have the Force, and Leia says, you know, I've known this. I just perhaps couldn't believe it, but you know, somehow she knew. So, and this is the theme, the beautiful theme that connects the brotherhood between Luke and Leia in that sense.
So this officially comes from the film Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And here it is, the Luke and Leia theme, or at least a portion of it. It just kills me to pop that down, but time is getting away from us. But this is just a portion of the Luke and Leia theme from Return of the Jedi that is part of this weekend's concert by the UW Parkside Orchestra and Community Orchestra. Maestro Arvalo Garcia, briefly explain the span of different scores from which you're drawing for this concert. I mean, unlike your very first Star Wars concert that was pretty basic, you're really drawing upon the whole Star Wars universe.
Yes. So basically we have music coming from the first trilogy, the Star Wars suite, then the Star Wars saga, which is also the first trilogy. Then you go to the Phantom Menace, which is actually the first, is the prequels.
Mm.
Right, the second trilogy that came out and then we had the Duel of the Fates, you know, Across the Stars, those beautiful themes, and we also have then the Force Awakens, another theme coming from the third final trilogy, but only we are now expanding to the TV series. So we will be able to see the Mandalorian, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and some other surprises there. so it's like a barrage of really expanded universe of Star Wars.
Fantastic. And you were saying that on your podium,
yeah.
you have this tall stack of various scores.
So basically, it's not just John Williams this time. Now we have John Williams, Michael Giacchino, Ludwig Göransson, right? So it's just... A different universe of Star Wars coming together.
Fantastic. So these performances are both 3 o'clock this afternoon, so Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon, in gorgeous Francis Bedford Concert Hall. I mean, what a stunning space in which to hear music. And I just can't imagine how beautiful and exciting this will be. And we encourage people to go to the Parkside website, uwp.edu.
Yeah, /the Rita, so yes. You want to find the tickets.
Right, and it's quite likely that these two performances may sell out. So I know you were saying there are a few tickets still available, but people should not dilly-dally. If they want to be part of this, it's really important that they take the opportunity just as soon as possible to secure their tickets. And there's a phone number at the box office, which I think is 595-2564, I think. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that's the phone number at the box office. And on the podium for both of these performances this weekend, Dr. Alvaro Garcia. Great to speak with you again. Best wishes to you and all of your young musicians who are sharing with the public what promises to be a magnificent concert of film music. And thanks for being my morning show guest today.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg.
And to finish things out, we're going to listen in its entirety to that magnificent main theme from Star Wars. This is from a Philips compact disc called By Request, the best of John Williams and the Boston Pops. And that's who we will hear playing the main theme from Star Wars. Boston Pops under John Williams with the main theme from Star Wars. One more reminder that this weekend's performances by the UW Parkside Symphony and Community Orchestra will be taking place on November 11th and 12th. You can get more information from the website, uwp.edu, and you can call their box office at 262-595-2564. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on the morning show, Max S. Bennett, the author of an absolutely fascinating book called A Brief History of Human Intelligence. Max Bennett has worked extensively in the field of AI, which stands for artificial intelligence. And his book is a very exciting and illuminating exploration of what human intelligence is and what artificial intelligence is by contrast. That's tomorrow on the morning show, just after 8 o'clock. Today's going to be sunny and breezy, gusts as high as 35 miles per hour at time, and our high temperature today, 52 degrees. Mostly clear skies overnight, continued breezy, overnight low of 35 degrees. Tomorrow, Friday, sunny, and our high temperature just 47 degrees. Looks like seasonal conditions under mostly sunny skies are expected through much of the weekend. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.